common sense commentary on politics, culture, and current events. If it's on your mind, it's in the news. And now, in the news, with your host, Mike Dakak.
The question is why? Jeffrey Epstein trafficked a bunch of little girls, some as young as 12 years old, by accounts of some of his other victims. Some of these children were for himself, but the main crux of the operation seems to have been a honeypot scheme in which wealthy and powerful men from all over the world were lured with promises of sexual relations, apparently, with little children. And there were a bunch of documents that were recently unsealed. They have to do with Ghislaine Maxwell. I don't know how you pronounce her name. I've heard it pronounced a thousand different ways to Sunday. I'm going to go with Ghislaine because it sounds the rightest to me. But Maxwell was the quote-unquote madam of this operation, it's being alleged. And she would recruit young girls, and she would say to them, hey, you know, you could be a masseuse, you can make a lot of money, you could travel all over the world, and you can meet rich and powerful people, you can be a model. I mean, she basically told them whatever she had to, it seems, to get them to go along and cooperate with what these people had in store for them. Nubiles, she would call them, according to other victims. We have to go out and find more nubiles, she would say. She would have relations with these girls herself, according to victims, or just pass them on to Jeffrey, or both. You know, one of the amazing things to come out about this whole Jeffrey Epstein thing, one among many amazing things, and I don't mean amazing as in good, I mean amazing as in spectacularly awful and bad. But one of the amazing things is that Epstein apparently tells Maxwell back in 2015 in an email, hey, you know, you didn't do anything wrong, he tells her. We didn't do anything wrong. Go on about your life as if everything is normal, he writes to her. Go out, go to parties, enjoy yourself, enjoy your life. They didn't do anything wrong. My gosh, if all of this is their definition of normal, if all of this is their definition of okay, I would hate to see what their definition of wrong is. What do they consider wrong if all of this is right? Maxwell, of course, is in custody now. Epstein is dead. They say he committed suicide. That's the official line. What exactly you believe he died of, that's for you to decide. But it turns out the whole point of this scheme was a worldwide sex trafficking ring of little girls to wealthy and powerful individuals, mostly men, because men were stupid enough to fall for this stuff and do this kind of stuff, as far as we know, with the purpose of getting dirt on them. That's the story here. The story here is this worldwide set. You know, a lot of people want to concentrate on, well, Bill Clinton was on Epstein's plane and he had the Secret Service, you know, stay back whenever he traveled on this plane, or there was this mysterious, disgusting island in the Caribbean where all of these things took place, or took place on Epstein's plane itself, the Lolita Express. Yeah, you know, all of those things are important. They deserve to be researched. They deserve to be known. They deserve to be parts of the story. But make no mistake about it, the real story here is why. Why was this operation started? Why was it set up? By whom? And for what purpose? Folks, this is a worldwide, you know, Jeffrey Epstein's victims talk about making as much as $200 an hour. And this is back 25, 30 years ago when that was actually a decent amount of money. You know, now the Fed just keeps printing money, so all the money in your pocket just keeps getting more and more diluted. Pretty soon, it's not going to be worth the paper it's printed on. 25, 30 years ago, that was real money. They talk about how he took them shopping, and not at Sears or you know, The Gap or JCPenney, at Chanel and Gucci and those kind of places, luxury brands. We're talking conservatively. You need a budget. This thing has to be funded with millions of dollars a year. It needs sites for these things to take place. It needs coordination. It needs infrastructure. It needs, importantly, protection and insulation. How many people do you have to pay off to keep quiet about this stuff? I mean, these two freaks, Maxwell and Epstein, they weren't just out here freelancing, blackmailing of wealthy and powerful men. Well, blackmailing them to do what? That's the story here. That's what we have to focus on. And don't tell me it's about money. I mean, Epstein had a plane. He had a mansion in Manhattan on the Upper East Side, one of the most expensive pieces of real estate in all of Manhattan, which is saying something. A mansion in Palm Beach, ditto for that. house, a ranch in New Mexico where they were going to build all kinds of crazy things. Folks, he had his own private island in the Caribbean. I mean, does it stand to reason this was all about money? I mean, it doesn't sound to me on the face of it like Epstein was going to bed hungry at night. Bill Clinton was implicated in this thing, as mentioned, former New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson. I mean, you think Bill Richardson has money? He's a civil servant. They don't have money. What do they have, though? Political power and influence. That's what it's about. You know, I used to wonder just what it was that made our elected officials get into office and then seemingly forget everything that got them there and act in ways that were seemingly the exact opposite of the best interests of their country and act in the exact opposite of the best interests of their countrymen. Okay, well, maybe that's a little bit naive, the countrymen statement, but they were acting in the exact opposite of the interest of the voters that put them there. And so therefore, by extension, in the exact opposite of their own best interest. Well, now we know. We're beginning to get a much better idea. It's slowly coming into focus. Certain actors from all over the world, intelligence agencies from all over the world, Europe, Israel, other places, have videotapes of these men having sex with little children. That's what it is. I mean, that's enough to make you change a vote on a certain bill or your stance towards a certain issue, isn't it? See, it only seemed as though, and the thing is that they used pedophilia because that in many ways is the only sin, the only unforgivable sin left. If they just used, you know, the blackmail of these men having extramarital affairs with other adult women, I mean, that, you know, okay, you might have to resign from office over the shame from that, but they don't want you to resign, not necessarily. They want you to remain in office. They just want you to carry out their bidding. This seemed to have done the trick. It only seemed as though they were acting against their own self-interest. Turns out they were acting in exactly their self-interest, right? I mean, it's hard to overstate what the implications of all this is exactly. Virginia Guffrey, who is maybe one of the most famous, she's kind of the face of Epstein's victims nowadays. She says while she was involved with Epstein for 4 years, in the late 90s and early 2000s, it started when she was 15. She saw maybe 100 girls come and go from his orbit, directly involved in the sex trafficking, that is. She actually thinks it's more than that, but according to these documents that were unsealed, that's the number she felt most comfortable saying, well, it's definitely more than. In other words, she was asked, how many girls do you think were affected? And she said, oh gosh, I couldn't even hazard a guess. I couldn't even tell you. That's how many there were. And so she's asked, okay, well, if you know, complete this sentence, it was definitely more than X. What number would you assign X? And she said, oh, 100. In other words, that's the bare minimum. It was actually much higher than that. Maria Farmer, who is another of Epstein's victims, she lived in Leslie Wexner's house in the mid to late 90s for a year, maybe less, several months. She was discovered by Maxwell and Epstein as an art student in New York City. And she worked for Epstein for several months, and then she found herself living on Leslie Wexner's compound in Columbus, Ohio, as a live-in artist. And artworks were commissioned from her, by Epstein and by Maxwell. And Wexner also had her working on several artworks for Hollywood films. Well, while she was in New York City, she was kind of working in Epstein's mansion on the Upper East Side, and she would sign visitors in and out as they came and went from that mansion. She said she would see 4 or 5 girls a day, folks. I mean, how many children have been kidnapped over the last, sex trafficking and child abduction really became a nationwide epidemic in this country in the late 70s and early 80s. That's when this all started. That's when this ring, as far as we know, kind of came to fruition. Farmer actually calls Wexner the head of the snake in this thing. Wexner is the owner of L Brands. If you've never heard of L Brands, you've heard of their subsidiary companies. Victoria's Secret, for example, is an L Brands company. Bath and Body Works is an L Brands company. She says it was funded by him. She eventually found herself living on his massive compound in Columbus, Ohio. Wexner's compound in Columbus, Ohio sits on 336 acres. In that town, nearly 5 square miles. I mean, the size of a small town. His main house is 45,000 square feet large. The house that Farmer was living in was 10,000. That's the guest house, 10,000 square feet. She says they had snipers walking around in the bushes. She had to call Wexner's wife, Abigail Wexner, and ask her for permission when she wanted to leave the house. She was there for several months. She only left the house a handful of times, she said. And so, she's there for some time. One day, she tells the story of Epstein and Maxwell coming out to visit, and they take her up to the main house. They take her up to a bedroom up there, and they sexually, also they attempt to sexually assault her, the both of them, at the same time. She fights them off, runs downstairs, runs to the guest house. Soon after that, Wexner's head bodyguard, this is according to Farmer, says he's going to kill her. She goes absolutely crazy. She makes the biggest stink in the world about it. This is according to her. She gets on the phone and she calls everyone she knew. She calls friends. She calls family. She calls ex-boyfriends. She calls everybody she knows. She calls 911. And this is where it gets interesting. And the dispatcher doesn't help her, refuses to help her. 911. She calls back a second time. And the dispatcher says, "You don't understand. The sheriff is at the gate of the home and not there to help her. There apparently to make sure things go according to plan." The dispatcher tells her, "You don't understand. The sheriff is at the gate. You're not leaving that place today," and hangs up the phone. This is what the 911 dispatcher tells her. Columbus for the longest time was the sex trafficking capital of the world. Whenever kids were abducted, they'd be taken to Columbus, and then from there they would leave the country. I mean, what exactly have these people done? Farmer tells the story of riding around New York City when she was still here with Maxwell. And Maxwell would see groups of young schoolgirls in their school uniforms walking around, presumably after school let out. And she would order the car to be stopped. She would tell the driver to stop the car, and she would hop out and she would approach these girls and she would attempt to recruit them. I mean, I'm not really sure we're ready to handle the implications of this thing. I mean, thinking people could be this evil is, it's a little scary, isn't it? And people don't want to face things that scare them. And we revert a lot of times to normalcy bias. And we say, this couldn't possibly have happened. You know, there's got to be more to the story than this. You know, I'm sure, the sheriff was at the gate. No, that couldn't have happened. And, the bodyguard said he was going to kill her. He wasn't really going to kill. But apparently all of this stuff is exactly as it's being told. Why isn't the media using its powers of perception, the mainstream media, and investigative skills on, don't they love uncovering scandals? Isn't that the mainstream media's job, bringing down rich and powerful people? Why aren't they using their powers of perception and their investigative skills on this story? You have to dig. You have to read articles and articles and articles to come up with names like Leslie Wexner and Maria Farmer. You have to wade through hours of YouTube videos. She's getting a lot more press now because her story is starting to come out. But you don't have to go any further than the headline to come across Bill Clinton's name. You don't have to read more than two or three paragraphs down into any article you're reading to come up with Prince Andrew and the role that he played and how he was involved. That's not the story. You know, last week there were Save the Children rallies all over the world. Last week there was a World Day Against Trafficking Day, which was celebrated on July 30th. There were rallies held in California and Virginia, Texas. They're part of an organization called Operation Underground Railroad, which is bringing awareness to human trafficking. That group reports having rescued nearly 4,000 victims over the past 6 years, just that one group, and assisted in the arrest of more than 2,000 traffickers around the world. Save the Children hashtags have grown in popularity in social media, hashtag Save the Children. Well, just yesterday, Facebook began banning any posts with that hashtag. So any post, anything that you post and you write hashtag Save the Children and you're speaking out, you're advocating, you're trying to bring awareness to sex trafficking, Facebook now bans you. It's that blatant now, folks. They're saying that anything that, the move is being made, anything that is good and anything that is right, anything that is just, anything that is holy, if you want to take it that far, We're going to attack and we're going to destroy. And they're telling you in no uncertain terms. I mean, they're not using these words, but they're telling you this with their actions. You're not going to do anything about it. You're impotent. We are in control now. What are you going to do about it? They're asking. You know, we've been covering the McCloskey story over the last couple of months. You may or may not have heard about the story. This is the story of Mark and Patricia McCloskey, a couple from St. Louis who defended their home against protesters with their guns. The protesters, Black Lives Matter protesters, had trespassed into their gated community back in June 28th. And the protesters were on their way, allegedly, to the home of St. Louis Mayor Lita Krusen. They were going to demand her resignation. They were going to hold this big rally in front of her home, and they were going to demand her resignation. Well, they cut through a gated community. They bust through a gate, and they cut through a gated community, and they're presumably on their way to Mayor Krusen's house. Well, the McCloskeys, they don't know. They see a bunch of, you know, this is at the height of the George Floyd protests, and they see a bunch of protesters cutting through their community. They come out with guns. And, you know, they think that the protesters are there apparently to do damage to the homes in the community. So they come out with their guns and they're like, hey, get at you're trespassing. You don't belong here. This is a private gated community. It's not public property. It's private property. You're trespassing. Go away. No shots were fired and the protests left soon after. McCloskey was holding an AR-15 rifle. Patricia was holding a small pistol. You've probably seen pictures of this somewhere on social media over the last several months. Well, the police, St. Louis police, execute a warrant at the McCloskey's home a couple of weeks after that. And during that search, the couple's guns are taken away. And it was unclear at the time what the grounds were for the confiscation. The weapons were owned legally. Well, on July 20th, St. Louis Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner files charges against the couple, against the McCloskeys. They were standing on their front porch, folks, and trespassers and protesters were trespassing onto their property, and they were defending their home. They pointed guns at them and told them to go away. St. Louis Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner files charges against the McCloskeys. They were charged with one count of unlawful use of a weapon. The charge is a Class D felony. They face anywhere from 1 to 4 years in prison. Now, they're probably not going to do any time. Republican Governor Mike Parson has made it clear that he's probably going to pardon them if it ever came to that. And Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt, also a Republican, is working hard to have the charges dismissed before they go any further. But Gardner, this woman Gardner, said at the time she was charging the couple in order to protect the rights of people to, quote, peacefully protest. It's illegal, she said in a statement, to wave weapons in a threatening manner. These people were, again, standing on their front porch. It's illegal, she wrote in a statement, to wave weapons in a threatening manner at those participating in a nonviolent protest. She says this type of conduct is unacceptable in St. Louis. That's not even the worst part. It's now been learned that Crime Lab staff members were ordered to disassemble Patricia's pistol, the pistol that Patricia McCloskey was holding, and reassemble it to make it operable. Missouri law says that for a person to face the charge that Patricia is facing, a gun would need to be operable. The McCloskeys are lawyers, and they're Democrats, by the way, or at least they've been sympathetic to Democratic causes in the past. And so they had taken this pistol, the one that Patricia McCloskey was holding, and made it inoperable so that it could be used in a courtroom. Well, Crime Lab staff members were ordered by the prosecutor's office to strip the handgun and reassemble it correctly so that it worked. That appears to have made the gun, quote, readily capable of lethal use, which are the exact words that prosecutors used in charging documents when charging the McCloskeys. Now, Gardner's office declined to comment on the revelation. Mark McCloskey's gun was operable at the time, and it was also test-fired by the crime lab. But they directly and deliberately tampered with evidence to make the charges stick. 8 days after St. Louis Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner filed those charges, George Soros donated $116,000 to a political action committee established just for Gardner. Last Saturday night, a filing with the Missouri Ethics Commission revealed a donation made directly from George Soros to the Missouri Justice and Public Safety Political Action Committee. That political action committee is set up apparently just for Gardner. As far as we know, no one else benefits from it. And so far, Soros is the only donor for that PAC. The committee has already spent more than $100,000, including $77,000, directly on Gardner. That money seems to have paid off, right? Gardner had a primary contest this week. She won by a margin of 61% to 39%. This woman, the story that the finances tell here, is that she's a direct employee of George Soros. Not of yours, not of mine, or the people of St. Louis, for that matter, but of Soros and his agenda. What's the message here? Giving $100,000 in a check, in a contribution to this woman after she files these bogus charges and has evidence tampered with against this couple. The message here is good job. Keep doing what you're doing and you're going to be taken care of. There's plenty more where this came from, he wants to tell her. Keep it up and money is not going to be your problem. You know, I hate to say it, but we're involved in a war now. The times have found us. You know, Pelosi liked using that line when it came to the sham impeachment nonsense that we were living with for 6 or 7 months here. But it's much more appropriate for this situation. The times have found us, and we have to take it seriously. I mean, it's an information war at this point, but they're doing everything they can to turn it into a kinetic war, turn it into a hot war. Keep in mind, when you're talking to people, they don't know the evidence that you know. Be kind. Be patient. Don't argue with them. Send them videos. Send them articles. Let them read for themselves. Like I've told you before, eventually they're going to read something like this and the light bulb is going to go off. It took more than a couple of stories to enlighten you, right? Well, it's going to take the same number, if not more, to enlighten some of these other people. Argue with them in the best way possible for now. We're facing a very serious situation. And the main goal now is waking people up to the realities that are happening in this country and have been happening in the world for a long, long time. Well, that's our show for today. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any comments on any of the issues we discussed, drop me a line. You can reach me at comments@itnshow.com. That's comments@itnshow.com. Thanks again for listening, everyone. Until next time, take care of yourselves and each other.
If it's on your mind, it's in the news. Subscribe to In the News on both iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. This has been In the News.